Welcome to Slaking Thirsts, a podcast that's all about bringing the thirst deep within our hearts for love and communion to the heart of Christ, a divine heart, who is seeking our love and communion in return. The hope is that the two thirsts would meet and both thirsts would be slaked.
This story that we have from the first reading from the Acts of the Apostles, this is one of my favorite just scenes in the whole New Testament. So you've got Paul and Silas, missionaries. They've been jailed. Why have they been jailed? Well, Luke tells us that the charge given to the magistrates was that these two men were advocating customs which were unlawful for Romans to accept or practice. That was the charge. So what customs? All right. It was simply this, a refusal to worship the Roman pantheon. Right, they refused to put a few grains of incense upon the altars of the Roman gods, the Pantheon, which was just not, it wasn't just simply religiously problematic, but it was socially, it was culturally problematic that in this act of rebellion, in this strict monotheism, they were representing this threat to the civic welfare, right? It was the relationship between the gods and humanity in the Roman mindset was one of antagonism, right? So the gods had to be placated. They had to be worshipped so that we would win favor, right? So the refusal to worship and the inviting other people to refuse to worship was putting everybody in jeopardy, was putting everybody in harm. So they're punished. How are they punished? They are, we hear this, Luke tells us, they're stripped of their clothing, they're beaten with rods, and they're put in jail. Just, like, I know we just say those words, Cease, you just read those words like it was nothing, right? Stripped of their clothing, beaten with rods. Try and imagine that. Like, just the other day, I was walking past one of the stools that we have at the island in the rectory, and, like, I bumped my ankle on the edge of the wood, okay? You know, like, you got that little ankle bone on the side? I just bumped it on the wood. I wanted to die, okay? I thought I was dying. It was so painful. And beaten with rods is what we're talking about. Oh my gosh, unimaginable pain. So then they're thrown into the deep darkness of a Roman prison. They're shackled beneath their ankles. I hope they didn't bump them. Okay, they're shackled beneath their ankles. Now put yourself in their place for a moment. You've been beaten. You've been arrested. You've been thrown into prison. There's no warmth in this prison. There's no soft glowing light. There's no laws on the books that dictate the humane treatment that prisoners are owed. There's nothing. And you're just sitting there thinking and feeling, well, what are you thinking and feeling? Like, what kind of headspace are you in at that point? I'd tell you, if it was me, it's not a good headspace. I'm in a pretty desperate, hopeless headspace. But where were Paul and Silas? That's the question. They're praying and they're singing hymns to God. Like, this is something I find so amazing. And you see that in the accounts of so many martyrs. And you look at the martyrology of the church, the stories of these martyrs going to their deaths, singing the Te Deum, singing the Ave Maria Stella, singing all of these hymns, praising God as they're, you know, walking to their cross to be crucified. It's unbelievable. There is this supernatural joy that resurrection life, it fills the soul when it's thrown into the crucible of suffering. At least that's the invitation. That if we are open to it, in the midst of immense suffering, there is immense joy that doesn't make sense. And like I read this story of Paul and Silas, and like what comes up out of my heart is, Lord, I want to be able to sing in the midst of my suffering. I want to be able to sing to you, to pray and praise you in the midst of my suffering. I don't want to just simply lament and gossip and vent and complain in the midst of my suffering. I want to sing. I want to sing and pray aloud like Paul and Silas, because they're singing and they're praying. It wasn't just for them. Like there's Luke says this. It's this subtle little line. He says, the other prisoners were listening to them. They're listening to them. So here's what happens, right? Choosing joy in the midst of suffering, the choice to sing in our suffering, it's baffling to a world and a culture that doesn't know Jesus, that can't fathom anything more awful than suffering. Like they'd ask, like, why would you sing right now? Like the bad thief on Jesus' left, right? Not Dismas, the other one. Deriding him, ridiculing him, cursing him for forgiving the executioners. Like, here's the point. Like, the eyes of the world, they're upon us as Christians. Like, when suffering shows up for us, which it does, which it will, like, if we respond the way that the world responds, like, the way that people who don't know Jesus, if we respond the way they respond when suffering shows up, then they'll just think, see, there's nothing to this Jesus. He doesn't actually change anything. But if, in the midst of our suffering, if we choose joy, then we give evidence to a life that isn't conditioned by the prison bars of this world. Like, and as a response to their worship in jail, the ground shakes. Luke tells us there's this great jailbreak. All the doors of the prison are opened. And that everyone's fetters, he says, everyone's fetters were unfastened. Notice it wasn't just Paul and Silas. Everyone's doors are opened. Everyone's shackles are loosened. It was all of them. What does this tell us? It tells us that our worship is meant to set other people free. The way that we live, it's meant to set other people free, right? For freedom's sake, Christ has set us free. He came to set the captives free. That's what he says in his inaugural homily in the synagogue at Nazareth. Free, yes, but free from what? Not just oppressive earthly powers, not any of those things, but free from the fear of death, free from the fear of not making it, fear of not counting, fear of not being loved, fear of being disqualified in the world's eyes. He sets us free from those fears. He sets us free from the motivating pressure of all worldly fear to live in freedom. He lets us live in freedom. Like, it's the freedom of a child who's so secure in her father's love for her that she's not worried about what's happening around her. She just dances freely. She sings freely. She lives freely because she's secure in love. Like, our worship, it's meant to do that for other people. Our way of being, it's meant to be this liberating force for other people. And the notice how the guard responds. He's my favorite character in this story. Like, the doors are thrown open, and the immediate despair he's filled with, he's thinking, like, surely they've left. Surely they've broken out, and I'm going to be punished. Like, there's no way they stayed here. I'm certain that they've bolted into freedom. So he draws his sword because he's about to kill himself because that's the best that he can think of. So much fear, right? And Paul cries out to him from the midst of the jail. He says, do not harm yourself, for we are all here. Imagine what that guard was thinking. Like, he's like sword drawn, you know, about to take his life. And he hears a voice calling to him from inside the jail. Do not harm yourself. We are all here. Why are you all here? Because somehow along the way, listening to their worship, Paul and Silas, all the other prisoners, they caught what Paul and Silas were exuding. It was this good infection that happened. They were drawn into the orbit of their own freedom and their own joy. And as soon as the prison bars opened, they didn't rush to escape to freedom because there in the cell, listening to Paul and Silas pray and sing, they'd already been freed. They didn't need to run out of jail to find freedom because they found freedom in the jail. And that's exactly what the guard begs of them. He says, what must I do to be saved? What must I do to have what you have? Like, because this doesn't make sense to me, is what he's saying. What must I do to have what you have? Like, that should be the question that our life elicits from other people. What must I do to be saved? Friends, if we sing and pray in the midst of suffering, you and I, we will set the prisoners free. We will live lives that are so provocative. We'll look like Paul and Silas sitting in the midst of a prison that's been broken open, and they're just sitting there singing and praising. May that be the testimony of our lives. Amen.